Hi, good people. I'm Caroline. I'm your co-host.
And I'm your other co-host, Laura.
And welcome back to the Evil People Podcast, episode 5.
We're doing it. We're making moves.
We are recording on Super Bowl Sunday today. So who do you want to win, Laura? I will ask you first. Do you know who's playing?
I do.
Okay. I do. I had to Google it.
I'm still, as you can like hear our keyboards clicking in the background as we Google. Here's the issue. I'm still very hung up and heartbroken about the Buffalo Bills and their game against the Chiefs. And the issue with the overtime. And so I really don't care. And I am just actively ready for next season to start because I fully believe the Buffalo Bills will go all the way. So
perfect. I like the prediction. I like the energy.
Oh, yeah. And I'm manifesting the Bills. For the Bills. It is on this. This is the record of it. Mm-hmm. The Bills. Mark my words, everyone. One of the episode that we record on the next Super Bowl Sunday, I will be on another level because I'll be ready to watch.
We probably won't be recording on Super Bowl Sunday if the Bills are in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be at Lake Norman. I will be in full Bills gear. Yeah. It'll be great. Do you have any skin in the game for this one?
I don't. I think Matthew Stafford is the name of the quarterback for the Rams.
You're doing great.
Okay. And he is from Dallas. So I know that there are some Dallas people rooting for him.
Interesting. But you don't view him as a traitor?
Meh. Well, I mean, the Cowboys are so terrible that, like, you gotta have somebody. So,
yeah.
But I think I am going to root for the Bengals today because I love an underdog story.
Yeah.
And I think that'd be cool since they've never won.
And I'm just happy the Chiefs didn't go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Pissed. Right. That would have really been rubbing salt in the wound for you.
Yeah. And honestly, Molly and I are not even going to watch. And I know that my family is probably listening and being like, oh, my God, but sorry.
I'm here for the snacks.
So. Yeah, here for the snacks and for your mad hosting skills, which we know you have. So.
Well, that's why I like hosting Super Bowl parties is because then I can be like, oh, yeah, I'm being a hostess. Like, let me go into the kitchen and, like, get more dip for everybody. And it just, perfect. Like, gives me something to do. So
yeah,
should be good
for you.
Well, I think I'm ready to dive in. This is a graphic one. It doesn't get graphic till the very end. So I'll give you that trigger warning now. But today I'm going to tell you the story of Robert Picton, who is probably Canada's most notorious serial killer.
Wow.
So it's an intense one. No, don't.
Not go Canada. Boo Canada. But I also feel like they probably have less serial killers.
They do.
Which I'm proud of them for that.
Yes.
I can say
they definitely that, they definitely have fewer serial killers than the U.S. does from everything I've read. So,
classic.
Yes. Well, shall we set the stage?
I'm ready.
All right. So Robert Picton was born in 1949. He's in his 70s today. He is still alive. To Leonard and Louise Picton. And they were a family of pig farmers in Port Coquitlam, British Columbia. Hopefully I said that correctly. And that's like 17 miles east of Vancouver. So it's a pretty –
I was going to ask
it's
what side
fairly,
it was on.
Yeah, it's fairly close to like – I mean, major metropolitan area. And that ends up being like a huge – reason he's able to get as many victims as he does. So that's kind of an important note that it's 17 miles away. It's like the distance between Reston and DC. That's kind of what I was thinking earlier.
You drove it enough times.
I did drive it enough times. So he's one of three kids, and it's an older sister and then his brother and him. And his older sister, Linda, was sent to live with relatives in Vancouver because like I mentioned, that his parents were a family of pig farmers. So they didn't think a pig farm, meaning slaughterhouse, was a good place to raise a daughter. But they were like, yeah, let's keep these two young boys here. This will go well.
Interesting that this sexism comes up so early in this episode.
Yeah. Don't even give on the patriarchy just yet.
I'm not ready yet, but it's just not interesting ready. That it's a noteworthy thing.
Yes. So apparently the mom, Louise, was really demanding. This is another one where he's got kind of a messed up childhood. So again, very interesting.
Yeah.
in terms of just differences between who we've covered so far. But Louise was very demanding. She prioritized the pigs over the brothers' personal hygiene, forced them to work long hours as like 10-year-olds raising the farm's livestock, and sent them to school in unwashed, dirty clothes, reeking of manure. And so in school, I mean, I'm sure you can imagine being a fifth grade teacher, if you're 10-year-old walks in, not in unwashed clothes, covered in pig manure, like, it's not going to go well for him.
Yeah, no.
So he got the nickname Stinky Piggy from his classmates, which is very tough.
Yeah.
So, and weirdly, though, he was still, I mean, I guess it's not that weird, but he was really attached to his mother. And even though she was, like, really kind of emotionally abusive towards him and, like, causing so many of the problems that he had in school and everything.
And he probably just wanted desperately to get her approval and attention.
Yeah. And he did – his father was apparently pretty abusive as well, more physically. So it was just not a good situation.
And they're also watching pigs die all the time. Like, a slaughterhouse is no joke.
Yeah. And they also had – so pig farming was, like, their main, I guess, business. But they did also have – some other like livestock, and one of those, he actually, when he was in his early teens, he used his savings to buy a calf, like a, you know, cow.
Yeah.
And like didn't want to use her as a, you know, for the slaughterhouse, whatever. He just like wanted a pet, and it, she became his beloved pet. He, you know, it was like having a dog for him.
If
like
you say, if you say that they killed this cow.
His mom, he came home from school one day and his calf, his pet, was missing. And his mom told him to check the barn, where he was heartbroken to find that they, that his parents had slaughtered his calf.
I.
Yeah.
That is,
like I said,
that is devastating.
That's an origin story. That's the origin story.
That's the origin story right there. I mean,
yep.
And okay.
And there's no real,
sad.
I know, and there's no real, like, I couldn't find the story behind that. Like, it wasn't like, there was nothing even like, oh, he was doing poorly in school, or like he had messed something up at the farm. Like, there was no real reason she did it. So like, clearly.
And it wasn't, they didn't need it. They didn't need like beef or something.
No. I mean, they were running a very successful pig farm. Like, they had plenty of pork, and they had plenty of.
For her to say, go check the barn.
Yeah, not like I had to kill.
Torture.
Right. I didn't, not like, oh, I had to kill.
Yeah, let me
you
sit
know,
you down and break it
right.
to you gently.
It was like, go check
Jeez,
it out.
Louise.
So oof. Clearly his mom, probably
mom,
pretty evil.
Mom also evil.
Yeah. So he dropped out of school when he was 14 and acquired the position of a butcher's apprentice. And then in 1970, he did that for 7 years and left the apprenticeship to work full-time at the family farm. So then his dad died in 1978 and his mother died the following year, leaving the farm to Robert and his two siblings. Now, again, the daughter had never like lived on the farm. She didn't grow up with it. So she was like, brothers, you can have it. I don't care about this. I'm living my best life in Vancouver, so y'all go to your thing. Yeah. And so they – I guess they're – Robert's 29, and his brother was also, like, in his 20s at this point. And they tried to take over the family pig farm and continue operating it as best they could, but they – obviously, like, they didn't have great memories at the place, so they sort of let it go into disrepair, and they really only – I'll talk about them later, but they didn't have like very many workers. It was too large for just the two of them to handle, and like they didn't really care that much about it.
Yeah, they have so much trauma wrapped up in it.
Yeah, so they weren't really that interested in continuing operating it. And they decided to just start selling the land because it's like acres and acres of land.
Yeah,
and they're like, we'll just keep, you know, their house, but we'll sell the land to other people. Well, they didn't realize how valuable land 17 miles outside of Vancouver could be. So it's the 90s at this point, I think. Yeah, maybe like the late 80s, early 90s. So, you know, the suburbs are booming and people are investing in land 20 miles outside of a big city to build neighborhoods. So they got $5 million for their land that they sold to a developer. So now they're like 29 and 31 years old and they've just got $5 million
and
after
they grew up just kind of regular. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And after dropping out of school at 14. So like quite the shift in, you know, just status really for themselves.
And means and what they could be able to do.
Exactly. So they decided to live pretty lavishly, obviously. Well, lavishly for them. But they sold most land. They kept their house. But Robert's brother actually like took the house. And then Robert had a trailer. So he was living like on a trailer next to the – they had the slaughterhouse, the main house, and then the like trailer near the slaughterhouse. And then the rest of the land had previously been for just like livestock, like, you know, moving around and stuff, but they like sold or killed most of their pigs. So they had, they had a few, like they kept some pigs, but at that point they were kind of still running the slaughterhouse on a very limited basis, but mostly they were kind of just Robert's pets at that point. And obviously, you know, he liked pets. He wanted to keep pets.
Yeah,
so
he liked animals.
Yeah. So they kept one worker on just to kind of help. And that guy's name was Bill Hiscox. And he described the farm as very creepy looking and described Robert himself as very creepy. And he acted – Robert was said to act super bizarre from not – I mean, he still didn't like shower. He had terrible hygiene, like probably, again, stemming from his childhood of his mom not really prioritizing that.
And you have to teach a kid how to be – it's not natural to kids – you learn how to be hygienic from the adults in your life, and he just didn't have that at all.
Yeah. So he was not showering. He would, like, walk through the manure fields, like, the fields covered in manure, and then, like, wear the same boots inside the house. So, like, it just was smelly and gross.
And he probably didn't have any friends, so he didn't have
– no, it's just him and his brother. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And apparently he talked really oddly about, like, women and animals. And something Bill noted was that it seemed like Robert was on drugs or drinking a lot based on his behavior, but he actually wasn't. He just genuinely was completely sober, but very creepy all on his own.
Right. And maybe some mental illness stuff
too. Yes, definitely. Definitely some mental illness going on. So in 96, the Picton brothers registered the remaining land and barn, like I mentioned, kind of those three, I don't want to call them like structures on the property because one of them is a trailer, but you know what I mean. Like the three main structures on the land. They registered it as a nonprofit charity called the Piggy Palace Good Times Society.
Red flag.
Red flag name.
Red flag.
And they claim to organize, coordinate, manage, and operate special events, functions, dances, shows, and exhibitions on behalf of service organizations, sports organizations, and other worthy groups. That's in quotes. So basically they're saying we're going to host events. Like we're going to make our like land for concerts and things. And then we'll donate all the proceeds to charity.
So did they have enough land to do that they hadn't sold?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the slaughterhouse is enormous. So basically they're like, we're no longer slaughtering animals. So we're going to convert the slaughterhouse into this like venue.
Okay.
It's not where you and I would go to a concert.
No. And did they – whose idea was this? Was it just the brothers together?
Or yeah, it was the brothers together. Okay. And like I mentioned, them being so close to Vancouver, like the brothers had gone out in Vancouver. There was a particularly bad neighborhood kind of on the east side of Vancouver and downtown east side. That was like the area. So they had gone to parties that were in like warehouses in the downtown east side. And so, like, they really liked that scene and wanted to create, like, a venue to kind of host those people.
They have something that could be very similar to the warehouse vibe.
Exactly. And so they start throwing – like I said, they converted their old slaughterhouse into, you know, a venue. And they start throwing raves and wild parties. And they invite Vancouver sex workers from this downtown east side. And it actually like became really popular. Like as many as 2,000 people would come to their raves
at one
time. And yeah, like okay, that's how big the slaughterhouse was.
And I guess that is actually like a thing where people like to go to places that aren't just like a club or like the creepy factor for certain people.
Right. And is appealing. So members of Hell's Angels were like the most frequent visitors. So it's definitely a type. I even wrote down it's odd to me, but it's not actually that odd because while the slaughterhouse wasn't in use, they kept the hooks up. And they it's there was the still vibe. Yeah, oh, there was still yeah. the pig blood all over the floors. Like they never like cleaned it. Yeah, like okay. stained, right. not like fresh pig blood, but like stains yes, from yes. years before, because that doesn't come out.
But still, you can see it, and that's just
mm-hmm. it's gross.
It's not my vibe, but
it's okay. not my vibe. Yeah, yeah, but their main clientele were bikers, drug addicts, because they would have kind of like you know the trays of free drugs that they would pass around a little bit,
and also like a little bit of like a free-for-all vibe. Like there's yeah. no rule, like a wild
no
west.
Rules.
Like,
there are exactly.
no rules here, and that again attracts a certain type of person.
Yeah, and they brought in the sex workers from Vancouver's downtown east side, which I actually did some research on this area as well, and it's basically like Canada's version of Skid Row in LA, where okay. it's thousands and thousands of people in tents,
right?
Which is very shocking to me that that exists in Canada, given how cold it gets.
Oh my God.
And also the fact that Canada's like more of a socialist country. So not
right.
Yeah. Right. They're democratic socialists. Is that what they are?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
We can fact check.
We'll fact
check.
They
have universal health care.
Right. So I figured they might have like not, I don't think they have universal basic income, but I thought,
you mean, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that they had like better infrastructure for homeless people, like things like that. So I was kind of shocked that this exists still. And so women start disappearing from this neighborhood, in quotes, you know, the kind of Skid Row area. And no one reported them missing. And why do you think that is, Laura?
Because they're sex workers.
Yay! Ding, ding, ding.
People view them as not as important or not as worthy, which is ridiculous. And then
and what I learned last episode
with nobody noticing.
And what I learned last episode was untouchables are different than undesirables. So.
Yeah, but actually, I had some feedback from some friends who also view untouchables in the way that you view okay. them. And then they also maybe there is a like book that we read. I bet there's a book that I read, like a YA, like middle school book that mm-hmm. like called a group of people the untouchables, and they were like the best of the best.
Yeah.
And maybe you read a YA book that was like the untouchables were like the outcasts of society. So
yeah, I think I was going going very biblical with it. Like untouchables
okay,
like are
like a leper.
Leper. Yeah.
Yeah. And that totally makes sense. Look at you whipping out your Bible knowledge.
Oh, you know me.
Who else
Well, so it's actually interesting. It definitely like our previous conversations, the no one cared, like society didn't care about these women, but also the others in the neighborhood, like the other people living in the tent neighborhood knew they were missing, but they also had a distrust of police. So
this is a huge issue as well. And they yeah, don't get in trouble if they're exactly. doing things that are against the law. If you go into a police station, like you're opening yourself up to that. And
right.
They don't want to risk it.
So, I mean, these poor women, they just, like, never stood a chance, to be honest, between the people who didn't want to report them missing and the police not taking it seriously. So somebody did finally get the police involved because, like dozens of people, dozens of women were missing.
Holy moly.
So they did get involved, but there were no bodies, you know? So they were just missing women. And so the police assumed that the women had run off and overdosed somewhere because so many of them were also drug addicts.
Right.
So really,
which is why
like
this
I said,
continues to happen is you just they
yeah.
assume these things about these. Oh, it's very upsetting.
Yeah. So in 1997, about a year after the Piggy Palace had opened, a year of, like I said, dozens of women disappearing, one of Robert's neighbors was awoken in the night to a banging on the door. Wendy Lynn Eistetter was there applying desperate pressure to a stab wound in her stomach. So the neighbors quickly ushered her inside. Thank God. Like, yeah. not everybody does that. Yeah. So thankfully, they ushered her inside to call an ambulance. And that was when they noticed another terrifying thing about Wendy. There were also broken handcuffs on her wrists. Mm-hmm. So not only was she nursing a stab wound, she had clearly been held up somewhere.
Yeah, been held captive.
Yeah, so they rushed her to a hospital, and she survived the ordeal and, you know, had life-saving surgery. and explained that it was Robert who had handcuffed her and stabbed her, but she had managed to disarm him and stabbed him in the face to get away.
What a badass. Good for
her. Yeah. And he had even gone to the ER, like a different one, the same night with the stab wounds that Wendy mentioned. And when the police arrived and searched him, he had the handcuff key on him that unlocked Wendy's handcuffs that were on her wrists.
And it, so was that like – that's how they caught him?
No. So the police arrested him.
It's so upsetting.
I know.
The same with our last evil person, Dorothea. Like, we could have stopped this so much earlier.
Correct. So the police did arrest him, but he basically said – Wendy was lying. She's a drug addict, so don't listen to her. And he claimed he had only handcuffed her because he caught her stealing from them. And then she had a knife, et cetera, et cetera. Like basically, like she tried to, yeah, there was a struggle and he handcuffed her only because she was stealing and he, you know, she stabbed him first and blah, blah, blah. And it was a struggle and that's how she got stabbed. And they totally believed him. And he was released and the charges were completely dismissed.
Interesting. Is this the time to bring up the patriarchy? Because are you kidding me?
I will let you bring up the patriarchy when we get back from this break.
Can't wait.
As per usual, today's episode is brought to you by Help Yourself Cookies, a custom-made sugar cookie company. The great news that I wanted to update you all with is that now Help Yourself Cookies is also creating cookie decorating tutorials on their Instagram at Help Yourself Cookies. So if you are like me, stuck inside because of the cold and looking for a fun activity, go check out at Help Yourself Cookies for some great ideas. Or if you're more like me and just like eating the cookies, go to helpyourselfcookies.com to order. They ship nationwide. That's HelpYourselfCookies.com. Now back to our show. And we're back. And I want to ask you, because we've had a couple of these episodes now, and there's definitely a common theme here. And I want to ask, how do you think it progresses from here?
So you're saying he got arrested. You said he got arrested, but it doesn't end there. So
right. The charges got completely dismissed from him stabbing a woman in the gut.
Because he said she was a drug addict and because of the patriarchy. Yes. Got it. Okay. I feel like because you're saying it doesn't end, he is going to murder somebody else. And maybe he murders someone who is really like, even if like they might be a sex worker, but someone who is very much missing and is a big deal.
Yeah, like how we had in Dorothea, like the social worker. Someone was looking out for that person.
Okay, so the next person, one of the people that he murders and the way he gets caught is it's somebody who is really reported missing and people are looking for. And at that point, they have this prior arrest that they know they let him go on, but they're like, wow, there's a pattern here. And maybe that's how he gets caught.
And let me ask you this. How long, months or years, do you think it takes – so we're 1997 right now. What do you think the timeline is?
So I feel like you wouldn't ask me that if it was a quick turnaround. Is my only right. Thought. This is how I like students will ask me a question and I'm like able to get the answer and they're like, "How did you get that?" I'm like, "You wouldn't be asking me if it was a simple answer." I'm going to go with this went on for 3 more years.
Interesting. Okay. So those are your official guesses.
That is my – you can lock those in as my final answers. And I'm okay if I'm wrong, but that's just, you know, that's what where my gut's going right now.
Okay. So back to our story. So remember how I told you about the worker, Bill Hiscox, who thought Robert was creepy? So he's still working for them at this point, and he's noticing some things because it's kind of hard not to if dozens of women are going missing and – this is the person making them going missing. So Robert was super private and, you know, no one was allowed in his trailer.
Yeah, yep.
But one woman who was, I guess, there partying, told Bill she saw a pile of women's clothes and, quote, at least 10 purses in Robert's trailer, like when the door was open. And Bill's no dummy.
Right.
I mean, he's following the local news about the disappearing women, right. and he's starting to put two and two together.
Can I ask a question?
So, yeah.
Do you think that he was keeping them because he didn't have a way of getting rid of them without noticing, or do you think these were like the trophies?
Trophies.
Gross.
Yeah. So Bill actually calls the Crime Stoppers tip line.
Oh.
That someone had set up for all these missing women.
Yeah.
And is like, hey, guys, this is definitely Robert doing all of this.
Oh.
And there's evidence in his trailer.
Oh, my God. I can tell by your voice this is not where it ends.
No, because the police go to interview the woman who saw the clothes and purses, and she refused to cooperate. So without her testimony, the police couldn't get a search warrant. And the case got dropped yet again.
Once again, the justice system, like the red tape on certain things and then the lack of all boundaries in other is simply baffling. Continue.
So here's my first kind of open-ended question for you. What – and I don't necessarily mean this woman because I think she was afraid of Robert, but it made me think, what percent evil do you think people are who let others get away with evil?
So it really – I think it's all about self-preservation, and I think that you don't think clearly when you're trying to protect yourself. And you yes. can quickly make a very – I mean, think about all the times that like on TV – like this happens a lot on TV where like this little issue on like a drama show, you know, like a – I can't think mm-hmm. of one. But like these little issues, people – are trying to protect themselves that they made a mistake and then it turns into this like massive big deal. And so mm-hmm. I think that our basic instinct as a human is to protect yourself. That's our number one instinct. So I think a little.
And it's a lot easier to ignore too than to say something.
Yes.
Most of the time.
Especially if, and you can really like, you know, you can really trick yourself into believing things pretty easily. And so she was probably – I mean, in this specific case, you said, you know, she was probably scared of Robert and she didn't want to get maybe tied in with that and have herself become a target. But also, like, you can convince yourself of anything just to make right. something go away. And so she might have been able to be like, oh, these are, like, lost and found. Or, like, he is a creep, so he wants to, like – if a woman –
maybe he's just stealing yeah, from women yes. or something.
And, like, yeah. going through their purse or something like that. But I do think there is a little bit of evilness. I don't know.
It's kind of like the old – I mean, I learned this on Grey's Anatomy, but I do think it is a real doctor saying that when you hear hoofs, think horses, not zebras.
That's yeah. so funny. I actually brought that – I hope whoever is listening that I recently told that expression to who hadn't heard of it, I have now proven to
validated.
Them. Yes, I feel super validated.
Yeah, so I think it's easier to be like, you know what, creepy guy, maybe he like likes to steal things from women, like hold on to them, and that's right, like his right. kink. That is almost – it's more believable
also,
than this guy is a serial killer.
And also this was in the 90s, and mm-hmm. they're – at this point, like you think about – and it's a totally different context, but you think about now how we view women and survivors of either sexual assault – or abuse, and how we really have not entirely, but as a culture have really shifted our view on that. And we really mm-hmm. try to lift up and
Definitely.
Praise these women. And that was not the culture of the time. And if, I mean, I don't know how much people were hearing about this specific story, but like women are going missing and you are yep. a woman who sees this and there's fear surrounding it. Like
Absolutely.
Like there's a lot of, if she was in this, this tent city we're talking
Circle.
About,
and yeah.
she doesn't want to get involved in the police at all. And that's a big thing is you see that a lot on TV is the police come to the door, they know something, and they refuse to let them in because of the distrust of the police, which is super valid.
Right. Yep. So at this point in our story, speaking of the police, they start going after the Pictons, the brothers, but not for murder, actually, for the loud parties instead.
Of course.
So remember that $5 million they got from a developer for their land?
Yep.
Well, the developer is trying to build, you know, a quiet suburb neighborhood outside of Vancouver for families, and these parties
next
and
to
the
slaughterhouse
attract,
club.
This is not good for business.
Sure.
So the police therefore sued the Pictons for violating zoning ordinances since the land was zoned for agriculture, not as a venue. But Robert ignored them and had a huge New Year's Eve party that year as a huge, like as a screw you to the police, basically. And then the town fought back and hit them with an injunction banning future parties. And the police were authorized to arrest and remove any person attending events at the farm.
Well, there you go.
So kind of interesting.
And then there's a police presence.
Yes.
And so it feels like you're there.
Maybe a little safer.
Yeah. And you're he's not as likely to do this.
Yet, still dozens of women are going missing. So
Sorry, are they going missing from the venue? Is that where he's taking them
from? They're going missing from Vancouver, from the downtown east side, but he is picking up the women to bring them to the party.
So he's using
the venue as a way to lure women out to his property.
And instead of taking them to the party,
spoiler alert, he kills them. No, he takes them to the party anyway. Like he'll take them to the party. He would pick up like 50 women and then bring them to the party and then maybe choose one that night.
Okay, got it.
To kill. And poor Bill Hiscox is just pressuring police to look into Robert as the bad guy. And thankfully, in a very Al Capone getting convicted of tax evasion moment. Another former employee came forward to the police to say that he knew that Robert had illegal weapons on the property.
Well, there you go.
So this was enough to get a warrant. And the police went to search the Picton's property, specifically Robert's trailer. And this was it. This was where they found the items linked to missing women and even the blood of a missing woman in Robert's trailer.
It's about time.
And so this, to your point earlier, you guessed 3 years?
Yes.
This was 2002.
Whoa.
So we've got, yeah.
How many years was that? When was?
Actually, 2002 was when the search warrant was.
And
had to check my Wikipedia facts.
When did he get arrested the first time?
97.
So it went on for 5 years.
Yes. So while he was arrested and while he was awaiting his trial, there was he was just in a cell with another inmate. But the inmate was secretly an undercover cop recording the whole interaction. And I want to play some of that recording of his confession for you. Okay. So I had sent it to you earlier. So you want to go ahead and listen. What do you think?
So he just admitted to it.
But he didn't know.
Oh, yeah. He didn't realize that it was a cop. And the cop honestly did a great job. I'm glad that the captions were on it. It was like saying officer, which helped me remember that this was a staged thing on their end.
Yes.
But the craziest thing is he just like full on admitted it. And he's proud. Oh, he's proud. And he's pissed that he didn't get to 50 because he wanted to beat some guy in the US. And like, you want to know like why somebody kills. And clearly towards the end, he just wanted to be a big deal. And so part of me is wondering like if he did get to 50, would he have like turned himself in or would he have written a note to the authorities or to the newspaper for a little bit of notoriety? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's like the conversation we had before I don't even remember what episode it was in, but we were talking about, I saw something that said the serial killers that we know about are the ones who got caught.
And they got bored and yeah.
It's because they got sloppy, right. Like he's mentioning.
Oh, yeah.
And did you hear or see the one part about his disposal methods, what he said?
So a rendering plant. Yeah.
So this is where it gets pretty graphic. Okay. And I know you're basically a vegetarian, so this is going to be kind of tough for you. Okay. So I'm warning you now.
Thank you.
So a rendering plant is where farmers take extra parts of their animals after getting the main meats off. So like organs, bones, whatever's left over after they get, you know, the cuts of meat.
Yep.
And the plant crushes up the leftover parts and makes it into gelatin.
Right.
Which, of course, is used in everything from lipstick
to marshmallows.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Robert's victims it into those items.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So there are people in the world that have consumed.
That used lipstick with a crushed up woman inside of it. Yeah. Yeah. And it actually does get worse.
How?
So basically his process was taking women from his parties, like I mentioned, to the trailer, injecting them with antifreeze, like he mentioned, or strangling them to death. And then after the party was over in the slaughterhouse, he would bring the victims' dead bodies in, hang them up on the hooks, cut them up, and feeding most of the parts to his pigs. And then taking the leftovers to the rendering plants. And most disgustingly, he would save the, quote, good parts of the meat, which he would combine with pig meat to make sausage that he would serve at the parties, give to neighbors. And most disgustingly, he would donate this sausage to food banks and orphanages. Your face right now, I know.
I don't know what to say. That is,
I know,
awful. And it just go like the sick and twistedness of it is
I know.
Oh God. Oh.
And as you heard in that clip, he wanted to get to 50 women killed to make an even number. He was proud of that number. He was proud that he was a better serial killer than the Americans, like you mentioned. So basically, that's my evil summary.
I mean, I have nothing else. Yeah, what else can you say?
I would only add that there is a second evil at play, like we talked about already, and that's the police in this case.
Yep.
So relatives of the victims, many of whom are actually indigenous people, said the authorities long denied there was a pattern to the disappearances of these women or that there were links. So the police did make an official apology in 2010, which was when Robert's trial was complete. And he was obviously officially convicted and sentenced to life in prison or 25 years, which is the maximum in Canada. So he will die there.
Right, he was
just given
older.
The age that he went in. Yeah, but that is that's kind of how it wraps up. But that's that. I have nothing else in my evil summary. I mean, he was, like I said, he did this horrific thing and then was proud of what he did and just wanted to get to 50.
And it went so, like, again, there's like this sense of like the evilness spreading. Like, all of these people were like in the absolute most disgusting way involved in this and were totally unwilling. Ugh.
Yeah, they had to put out a health advisory when they found out like what he had done. And honestly, I don't think that testimony – or not testimony, that confession in the jail cell was able to be used.
But they must have had enough evidence on him.
Yes, they had plenty of evidence. Although they only actually were able to recover like body parts of they recovered body parts of 20 of his victims, I believe. But he only got convicted on 6 because the other like 14, like the evidence, it was very lacking in evidence. So he was really good at disposing the bodies.
And then
eating the bodies is.
Yeah, because how do you can't trace that. And then he even said, I got sloppy.
Yeah. So I think that even though that confession wasn't able to be used in court, I think it was still really important that they did that because it answered the question for a lot of families.
Yes,
of like what happened to my daughter.
Yeah. And that's a really hard one to hear, but then you know, and there's no doubt, there's no lingering. Like, that's the thing is, like, you watch documentaries where even towards the end, the convicted killer still denies it or still, you know, there's so many unanswered questions, and like, you're kind of just desperate to know why. And hearing from his own voice, at least you just, you have a sense of why he did it, and it's because he's evil. And that's really, that's it. Oh my God, that was rough.
I know, it ended so rough. I'm so sorry. I'm glad they got him.
I'm glad he's gonna, he's not in society.
Yep. I never will be.
He's full 7-7.
Yeah.
The full fraction, 7 out of 7. 100%. Okay. Because
I agree.
There's just no way around it with that one. And there's no motive. That's the other thing is, like, not to say that, like, Dorothea wasn't evil, because she was, but, like, there is no motive here except evilness. Like,
you can't. Yeah, she was stealing their money.
She was stealing their money, like, and then she was evil about it. 100%.
He wasn't getting anything out of this.
No,
other than his own satisfaction of taking a human life.
Of killing people and then making other people eat
them. And then feeding.
Yeah, very Jeffrey Dahmer. So 7 out of 7, the full bottom. And like the classic.
It would almost go 8 out of 7 for the giving sausage to the orphans to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
That was what really put it over the edge for me.
I would agree with that as well. That's and like,
clearly I'm a sucker for like kids. Like, the episodes that I've done where I've done the research, I'm like, oh my God, but the kids.
The kids. And I mean, and there's the element of like, he was doing it under the guise of doing something good. Like,
yeah, they did get their nonprofit like status. Like, they got that stripped a year into running the Piggy Palace.
Right. But like, but if you're donating to orphans, you're like, oh, I'm such a good person. Like, I'm donating. And in reality, it's all manipulation. It's all evil.
I think that was part of why the police believed him, especially in that first attack in 1997 on Wendy Lin, because he was, again, this like kind of upstanding community member. Right. Like, he's running a pig farm and he's donating free food to people in need. So it made him look like a better person in comparison. And he was never on drugs from everything I've read.
Right.
So it's like, in comparison to the women who were oftentimes drug addicts, the police were just really inclined to believe him.
Yeah.
And obviously that was a huge mistake. And I'm really glad that of all the stories that we've done where the police are clearly just the worst.
Yeah. Incompetent.
I'm really glad that this police group apologized for their role in they could have prevented dozens of women from being killed.
Yeah. And if anything, hopefully that can set precedent. And I mean, this happened 12 years ago, but still that, you know, police can own their share of the blame in certain cases.
Own up to,
So I would say, as far as torture, a little bit of being revisited by the victims of the Holocaust, but instead being revisited by the victims of his own murdering. And I would very much say he would be – I think he should be alive in the hooks. Like, not alive, but he's in eternal – he's at the depths of hell. And I would say each woman gets a turn.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, not really them, because they're not in hell with him. But you know what I'm saying? Like, this, like, vision of them.
Yes.
And
vision of them is torturing him.
Antifreeze. It's strangling. It's being – fed to the pigs live. It's all of those awful, awful things. Just
you know, the
repeat.
One that I thought of,
yeah,
too. And I'm actually like kind of ashamed from an evil perspective, because it makes me feel a little evil to think of it.
Oh no, like, but that your mind took you there.
Yeah, but of all of the things that he seemed to care about the most,
oh no, his calf.
I would kill his calf in front of him. A vision of his calf
in front
of him for the rest of time. Because if that's what he cared the most about, that's what I would want to take away.
That is a good one. Yeah, hit him where it hurts.
I'm getting a little more evil every episode.
I mean, yeah, our brains are just being a little trained for this type of thinking, which is tough, but you know, it is what it is. I'm still learning a lot, and that's like, oh God. This
is definitely one. Yeah,
this is a stomach turner for sure.
I got chills like listening to the confession. I got chills watching you listen to the confession. And it, yeah, this one, it's going to like stick with me.
Absolutely.
This is the one where I feel sick after.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus I normally am left sick.
Because I know it's going to happen.
Right,
versus
right.
You don't.
Yeah.
Like I've had time to come to terms with it. But yeah, this one sucks.
We can compare our recovery dates. Like I'll text you on like Thursday and I'll be like, I'm feeling better, but I'm still not okay.
I had a dream last night.
Yeah, exactly.
It's bad.
You're paying for my therapy, exactly. Caroline.
Yeah, we got to get a BetterHelp sponsorship on this podcast
so that we can have it for all of our listeners. Listeners, if you're out there, we are going through it with you.
Yep.
That's a good, well, that was a good joke. Way to end on a laugh for me.
On a light note.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you always taking the time to listen to our evil stories, and I will see you and our good people listeners next time.
Thanks. Bye.